Welcome to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast.
A classic turn one play. I'm Amy Orr.
And I'm Matthew Orr Bridges. All right, so we have a little bit of a different episode today. We wanted to talk about the prep work that we are doing for DLC Milwaukee. I know. And you know what? It's coming up really soon.
It's like way sooner than I think that it is.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody and they were like, oh, wow. So you only have like 10 weeks, 8 weeks to choose a deck. And I'm like, oh, don't say it like that. I thought I had so much more time.
That's also.
And that was like.
Yeah, I was like, that must have been a while ago, because you definitely don't have that much time.
No, that was like when Fabled released, and I was telling them like, yeah, we're going through a rotation. And he goes, oh man, you only have like, you have like a month and a half to choose like a deck, and the metagame isn't going to be established initially. And I'm like, okay, cool, yeah, thanks. And then freaking Team Cherry decided to shadow drop Silksong, and.
Priorities. Like, what are you gonna do?
And so I just lost 70 hours of my life that could have been dedicated to figuring out the perfect deck to play at Milwaukee, and instead I beat Silksong. So
yeah,
anyway, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Anyway, so neither of us have chosen a deck for Milwaukee is what I'm hearing.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, If it's anything like the other DLCs, I'll probably be like, the week before, I'll be like, I don't know if this one's going to do it. Should I switch, Matt? And then you're like, no, are you kidding? No, you should not do what you want to do, Amy. Don't switch the week before. Yeah. What are you talking about?
And I am saving you with my own experience, because I remember going to a Magic Grand Prix and... the week before, being like, oh, I saw this really cool deck list online. Yeah, I've played it like 4 or 5 times online. I'm going to take it to a Grand Prix that we're driving 8 hours for. And it's like, oh, cool. 1-2 drop. Like, that was my weekend. That was worth it. So I'm trying to save you. I guess tip number one, choose your deck and don't change it the week before. Like, we're going to decide on a deck and we're going to practice it. And maybe we'll go back and forth on 1 or 2 decks. But I swear to God, don't choose the Ruby Emerald deck that pops up the week before DLC Milwaukee and been like, but it's so cool. Look, it plays Powerline.
Yeah,
I think
that's something I'm talking about.
I think some people may try to do that on purpose, where it's like, hey, guys, isn't this a really cool deck that you want to try out next week in Milwaukee?
I mean, because definitely you'll get the people who like have their secret mix that they aren't telling anybody about. And they're like, I'm going to surprise everybody and I'm going to win based on the surprise. But you're saying somebody out there totally like
maliciously
being like, guys, try this. It's awesome. And then they're like,
I've been testing this for 8 weeks and I finally just decided to give it away.
And then they're like, yeah, I'm going to beat that like so hard. That's interesting. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
That's some Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime level of sabotage right there.
Yeah, that's like the meta game.
Well, and I think, I don't know, like with how like monetizable, I guess, some content creation with this game is, or with any TCG, there's a little bit of me that's like, I mean, I already don't like Metafy deck lists. Like, I already don't like that as a general thing. Not deck lists, deck guides, you know, like where it's, hey, here's how to play Blurple from a person who has some credentials. Pay me $10, pay me $15. I have a hard time with those things, because it's like, it feels a little gross. It feels a little exploitative. But, and then also part of me wonders, like, if a big name pro player, not going to name anybody specifically, but like, if somebody with credentials publishes a Metafy guide or a list that they're working on, and they're like, hey guys, I made this list. It's really good. Here are the reasons why it's really good. And you know that they're showing up to the DLC. I wonder if they're showing up with that list. I'm always a little paranoid about that, because it's like, I don't actually feel as though players who have made this their career are going to show up with the lists that they have posted to the public. They're going to show up with something different, even if it's just a few cards different.
So I think that, oh, okay, all right, yeah, a few cards different. That makes sense. Because I think that in listening to a lot of these and listening to, like, interviews after the fact with some of the players, like, they've straight up said, yeah, I posted this. I feel like a lot of them have been like, yeah, I posted it this morning. They're like, yeah,
right,
play it. Or, yeah, this is what I'm playing. But they're like, you don't really have time to either learn it or tech against it or whatever, right, you know?
Right. Well, and I think that there's a weird incentive or disincentive structure where we want to create a community. We want to create, you know, this global community based around our mutual love for this card game, for competition. And then it's in direct tension with the fact that competition is inherently, you know, like, competitive and people want to win. And so growing the community and having this release of information, this open flow of information, actually runs counter to winning sometimes, where, you know, this is what happened when Pixelborn shut down, where we don't have access to all of this information anymore. The information is now being gatekept behind private playtesting groups. And, like, no faults of the playtesting groups, because, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. There have always been playtesting groups. But at least when Pixelborn was around, or when any open digital client was around, people figured out what everybody was playing, you know, because the Pixelborn was the way to efficiently test ideas.
Right.
And it was not efficient to print out proxies to go play in person, you know? And with Pixelborn, it was like, cool, I have an idea, I'm going to whip this up. Oh, this doesn't work, I'm going to swap out, you know, I'm going to change the ratios on this. And people were able to hone in on what the metagame is very, very quickly. And I know that that was a criticism of Pixelborn, which is that it solved the meta too fast. And some people feel as though a solved meta means that it's a finished meta. And so without Pixelborn, the meta doesn't get solved as quickly. I would submit that the meta is going to get solved regardless. And you can either be in the know or you can lose. And I think that that's what is happening with these pro players. You see the same names pop up over and over again in the top eights of these big tournaments that are happening. And I think it's because they have access to information that not everybody does.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel tuned in to this metagame in a way that I wasn't before, but I also do feel as though there definitely is something that I'm missing, because I'm just not in those inner circles. And so it's giving me decision paralysis when it comes to what to play in Milwaukee in October.
I know. I, in desperation, did a Google search of what is the current Lorcana meta breakdown. I knew it wasn't going to work. It kind of worked. It didn't work.
The Google AI is that's an excellent question.
Well, Google AI totally named all the correct decks. No fault there. But I need it to
It's gotten better about that, because before, you know, maybe a year ago, it would have been like, the white-orange deck is actually the most popular.
Yeah, no kidding.
You said that that Google was able to accurately say what the metagame is.
When I say they're able to accurately say what the metagame is, I mean that they said that the current top decks are Blurple.
I want to see if it matches what my what my impression of the metagame is.
Oh, okay. Well, you're also trusting my memory, which is terrible. It's terrible that you're trusting it. I actually have a pretty good memory, but I barely looked at this.
Except when it comes to Lorcana. I ask you all the time, like, hey, how'd your round go? What'd you play against? And you're like, I have no idea.
Oh, yeah. I have a total... Won. Yeah. What did I... there's like this... I don't
remember what cards my opponent played.
This wall that comes up or like... games are like filtered away into like this special spot of my brain where like
it's just a void.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, they were playing colors? Like they didn't just have like a blank deck? I
don't remember. I won or lost, yeah. And I know that part, but everything else is just blank.
It's not great.
Well, so here's my interpretation of the metagame. Is Blurple, obviously, public enemy number one, which is hilarious because I remember back in like set 3 or 4 where everybody's like, Blurple, okay.
Yeah. I know, I love that.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I love a good underdog to mad tyrant dictator. So Blurple, public enemy number one, obviously the top of the metagame. And then you have the counter to Blurple, which is Amber Steel, putting up really good results recently. And then you have the middle ground, kind of a mix, if you think about it, between Amber Steel and Blurple, which is Purple Steel. So it kind of does, it has the benefits of Amethyst and it has the benefits of Steel, but it's, you know, in the middle between the two. And then you have the deck that everybody apparently hates coming out of the ether, blue-green. And I don't know where that fits in. There's not a fourth rock, paper, scissors. So, like, I don't know where blue-green fits into the dichotomy. No, so, like, I don't know where blue-green fits in. I think it probably has a good matchup against Blurple. That's the reason it exists, right? Is to take down Blurple. But right. Then I don't know what it does against everything else. And then you kind of have... if those are the tier 1 decks... maybe Blurple is tier 0. Probably not at this point, but it's getting close. You have the tier 2 decks where you have, like, Blue Steel Allies with Scar. That's pretty strong. That can be pretty strong. And then you have maybe Amber Emerald Chernadogs without the Cherna part. And then you have Ruby Amethyst, like, moving damage counters around, which can be very powerful. And then that's really it. I would say we're heavily divided into 4 tier 1 decks, 3 decks that are probably tier 2 or lower, because I would probably put Blue Steel as the only tier 2 deck, and then everything else is tier 3.
It's just so hard.
Well, and it's the hardest one that we've had to deal with because of the rotation. Whereas before, you know, when we were prepping for Atlanta, when we were prepping for Vegas, we had a deck that we were playing, and then yeah, new sets get released, but we just adjust based off of those changes.
Yeah,
but now you just
look at what each of those decks got, what any of the lower decks that are fighting for a higher spot might have gotten that will lift them up. But this is just...
And then you look, you know, like, the core of the metagame always stayed the same, and you just had to figure out, okay, what do I get in my deck? And what is every other deck playing that changes what, like, answers I put in my deck, you know? Because, you know, for a while, Ruby Sapphire was playing Pegasus as an answer to Diablo and also as a turn 2 answer to Flynn Rider.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't always a part of their deck, and it fell out when Diablo and Flynn Rider fell out of favor, you know? And so it's like... that was fine for back then, but now it's just, I mean, it's a whole new... I mean, I like it. I really do like it. It's an infinite world of infinite possibilities, except if you're playing Ruby. But kind of killed Ruby. I know.
I know. I was thinking about it earlier. Nowhere. I was thinking about it earlier, and I was like, none of these decks... oh, what happened to you, Ruby?
There's just no...
oh, it's... no, you've good. Lost all of your cards. Oh, I see.
The only good Ruby card is Maui Half Shark, and it has nothing to do with it. It's just... it's so bad. Like, you can't...
what
you
are
can't
you talking
make a deck
about,
out
Matt?
Of Maui Half Shark.
They've got Pirate's Life. They could just use that over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, I guess. Listen, I was not a fan of Maui Half Shark. I didn't really ever play it, but to see it fall from grace so heavily is, yeah. And like the entire color is just basically unplayable. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is going to be an Emerald Ruby deck that is being tested in private right now, and is just going to sneak in and take everything down.
Well,
I just don't
and
see
we've
that happening.
Seen some Ruby Amethyst damage movement, you know?
Yeah, we've seen it a little bit, and I think that's probably the closest. And like, the problem is that, like, I think the incentive to keep something a secret is not high enough when you have these third-party cash tournaments where people are like, why would I keep this a secret for the DLC when I can win $7,000 in Atlanta, you know? Like,
yeah. No, my point of view about where the meta is going is not that people are keeping things secret, but that by Milwaukee, it may have settled somewhere slightly different, you know? Like, right now, blue-green is trying, and maybe it's going to be the thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it just, yeah. it's not the thing yet, but it's a thing. And maybe by then, that's going to be where it settles. I don't know. But I don't think there's going to be any super big surprise.
No, probably not. Well, and what's interesting is that Milwaukee happens like... Yeah, Milwaukee... The DLC Milwaukee happens the week before Whispers in the Well releases. So Milwaukee is going to be the last tournament of this metagame that we're playing in.
I think I remember that really frustrated you in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That excites me a lot.
Atlanta happened, I think, after the release of Ursula's Return, but before it was, like, legal at the DLCs.
That's right.
And so it was like, well, what am I even doing playing a dead metagame? I mean, like, obviously I'm playing in a tournament, but it's like, that was different also because people were also prepping for, like, Chicago, which was happening.
Oh, that's a very
3 weeks
point.
Or something after Atlanta. And it's like, well, Atlanta is not practice for Chicago.
Right. That is a very good point. You know? That's a big difference.
So that's actually... I think it's a good thing that we don't have as many DLCs.
Dun, dun, dun.
No, I don't know. Like, you are a very... You have a certain affinity for control decks.
I do.
And so you have written off playing, like, any sort of aggressive strategy. You know, like, you probably will not be playing Amber Steel.
Probably not.
At Milwaukee. So,
spoiler alert.
Yeah. Oh no, we're giving it away. They're going to see you and recognize you. So it's interesting because you have played Blurple, but you've also played other Sapphire decks. Mm-hmm. So like, if you were choosing between the two control decks of the format and you're choosing between Blurple and Blue Green, what is swaying you one way or another between those two different control decks?
Well, so I'll tell you the two things that are impacting me right now, which are basically the same thing. One is that I haven't really played a lot of blue-green. I played a little bit and did what it's trying to do with its 1-2 punch. But it also felt like it took a lot to set up to get to that. Mm-hmm. The heads held high. Is that what it is? Heads held high,
yeah.
And under the sea combo. It took a lot to get to it because my opponent kept taking out my characters, which is obviously what my opponent needs to do. But like with both of those being fairly costly cards, it takes a lot to get there. And if that's my win condition, then I would want it to be a little easier to pull off.
Well, and so, I mean, like, Amethyst is so powerful. Like, everybody knows how powerful Amethyst is in this metagame. And so I can see gravitating towards Blurple because it has the two best colors in the format, right? and like this is the merry-go-round that I'm doing in my head trying to settle on a deck where it's all right, well, I'll just play the best deck in the format. Like, why would I not play the best deck in the format? It's clearly the best deck for a reason. And then it's like, well, am I going to be better than the other? Exactly. Like, am I going to be better? Because if I play the best deck in the format and it's 45 to 55% of the metagame, I'm going to be playing mirror matches. And I have to rely on my skill. And at that point, you have to think, okay, are you going to be better than everybody else at that deck? And some of that's going to be a little bit of luck, but I think a lot of that is going to be skill based. And
well, I remember
I don't want to not bet on myself, but
I remember this happening two sets ago where I had just abandoned red blue, and everybody was playing red blue, and I was afraid to go back to it because I was like, well, everybody's playing it, but. In the end, you know, we had this conversation. We did. Are you better at piloting the deck than the other people who are playing red blue? And I'm like, oh, I'm great at playing red blue, and so I did go back, and then I did do very well.
And then you did well, yeah. So yeah. There are going to be some people going to these DLCs, going to Milwaukee specifically, that don't expect to win. You know, they're going to have a good time, they're going for the experience. I don't know that I can be in that mindset. Like, I have to go thinking that I have a chance to win. And so there's a little bit of me that's just like, well, I don't know if head-to-head I can beat some of these pro players. Like, they're obviously more experienced than I am, but I don't know that I can make deck decisions based off of that feeling.
Yeah.
Because I think it's going to lead me astray, where it's going to be like, okay, well, if I can't rely on my skill, what can I rely on? I guess I have to get lucky. And if I have to get lucky, then one, it doesn't matter what I play. But then two, like maybe I'll play a really high roll deck, you know, like maybe I'll play Emerald Amber Chernadogs and just plan to win every single die roll, you know, like,
right.
But then I think that that's a mistake, because then you're not going to win every die roll.
Well, and if we think, okay, so in the past, the conclusion has for me been, I've got to play what I am most comfortable with. That's really where I'm going to do the best, regardless of what I'm playing against. I have to be comfortable. What if we flip that around and we think about the people who are playing Blurple because it's the best, and that's not true, because they are great with it.
That's true. So I mean, like, you could definitely get some percentage points on people. Like, if you are extremely comfortable with Blurple, we have been thinking about it from, okay, well, how am I going to beat these players that have been putting up top 8 results with Blurple, because they clearly, you know, they have more experience than we do, they may be better players than us. But we could think of it the opposite way, where it's, well, I'm experienced with it. Some of these people are picking it up for the first time because it's good. I'm probably better than them. So right. It's like, what's the split? How, you know, we'll never know that, but no.
But it does add into the some tournament, confidence that.
Yeah, it does. Like, are you better than some amount of people who are going to be picking it up because they know it's the best deck?
Yes.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to just say yes.
I think that's a, huh?
Yes, not probably. I'm going to go with yes.
Yeah, I mean, Mom always told me to leave wiggle room for everything, so I have a hard time saying yes or no to anything. My answer is always probably to any question given to me. Yeah, no, I think that that's a really good point. When I was prepping for Vegas, I took Ruby Amethyst, and my thought process with Ruby Amethyst, I mean, it was slightly different because it was a two-game format, and you had to win a game on the draw in order to have any shot. Every match, you had to win a game on the draw. And I felt as though it had a pretty even matchup into basically any deck. And it also had the least play-draw disparity from my viewpoint. So I'm trying to port that knowledge into a deck to play for this metagame. And I'm thinking about, you know, like Purple Steel. I think the closest thing to that is Purple Steel, where it does feel as though it's very Ruby Amethyst of the old meta. And I think it does have similar points where I think it's the play draw discrepancy is pretty even. We do not necessarily have to win a game on the draw. If you win the die roll, you can win games 1 and 3 and have always won something on the play. But I don't think it has as even of matchups into everything. I think it loses to the blue-green deck more often than it wins. I don't know that for sure. Just based on the vibes, it feels like the blue-green deck is preying on the Amethyst decks a little bit. So, I mean, like, right now I'm leaning towards Purple Steel. But if Blurple is the number one enemy, I don't know that Purple Steel really gets the job done consistently in order to fight that metagame. So I don't know. There's no conclusion to be had here yet.
Oh, of
like
course
we have not settled on any decks, and so that this is the merry-go-round in my head where I'm just talking myself in circles of, well, maybe I play Blurple. Oh, but you know, if I play Blurple, you know, it just keeps going around and around and around again.
Yeah. And I think for me it's going to end up being whatever I'm most comfortable with, and I just gotta accept the losses that are coming to me. And you know, as we've talked about in the past, there's a freaking paper rock scissors, and
oh, hated that.
What?
Paper rock scissors.
I know. I hated okay. Paper rock okay. Scissors. No joke here. I was like, what are the words? And I was
you
like,
forgot.
I can't remember. Paper's one of them.
Uh-huh.
And
rock is another.
And then rock's another. And then scissors is the third. I'm good. Okay. Wow.
Well, just like dad and mom used to tell me.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, that was weird.
I did bring this up. Like, I was talking to some people at Locals. And I was like, I think the first 3 to 4 rounds are going to be not necessarily the hardest rounds at the DLC, but the most likely that you are going to get got, that you are going to get surprised by something because of everybody's, you know, even records. You can play literally anybody. And then after rounds 3, 4, or 5, you are going to, it is just going to come down to your skill, and it's going to come down to how well you prepared for particular matchups. And so I think, ultimately, if you are choosing really any deck, I know that we're kind of waffling between these four at the top of the metagame, but I think if you're going to choose one of these decks, it's going to come down to how well you prepared. And I think, that's exactly what we've been talking about. It's about your comfortability with the deck, but not necessarily just with your deck, but with your opponent's deck. If you are well prepared with your deck into any other deck that you can face, then I think you're going to be far better off. That is a far bigger deal and a far bigger factor than your deck decision.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I have been lamenting for the past year about my loss with my win and in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And my round 9 loss was against, it was Ruby Amethyst against Blue Steel. And Blue Steel had not really been putting up results in the metagame that season. And I never practiced against it. I just did not practice against it. And it was the first time I had seen it all day, and I lost. And I just kept thinking, and have continuously thought, if I had practiced more going into Vegas, I wonder if I could have won. Maybe not, but I wonder if I would have been better prepared to face that matchup. And I wonder if I would have made day 2 in Vegas. And so it's one of those things where it's just like, I think you just gotta hunker down. I think you gotta choose a deck, you gotta hunker down, and then you just gotta jam tons of games against everything that you think is going to be there. And obviously you can't play against everything, and somebody's going to show up somebody's going to show up with Ruby Amethyst, and maybe you didn't test as much against it because you didn't expect it to be a large part of the metagame, but you face it round 2, and you gotta rely on your own intuition at that point, I think, in order to in order to make it through those rounds when you start playing the meta decks that you imagine are going to be there.
Yeah. My method at DLCs has been to lose just enough to guarantee I can't get into day mm-hmm. two mm-hmm. and then win the rest. That's what
sure,
I've done.
Sure.
That's my plan.
How's that worked out for you so far?
I got a lot of points.
I've accomplished my goal.
I got some good prize wall stuff.
Is there anything left to say? I think that was a pretty good discussion. It was kind of wandering.
Yeah,
but
wasn't
I think
super
that...
what the intended discussion was, but I think it was a good one.
I think it was a good discussion. I think this was much more... I'm going to say this is what Lorcana podcasts sound like, and our other episodes don't sound like typical Lorcana podcasts. But whatever. You know? Like,
well, and what's interesting about the conversation that we just had is that obviously it is... specific to this meta, but you can just pick up all of the decks that we're talking about and put in a different right. meta, and then the conversation is the same. It's
everybody is going to have this conversation next rotation.
Right, yeah.
You know, like, or even when set 10 comes out. So, it'll be a little different, but that's, I like doing evergreen topics. I don't like doing highly contextual conversations because I want people to be able to go back and listen to our previous episodes and not feel as though it's irrelevant.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that I don't think it's irrelevant. Even if we're talking about something specific, I think that it'll still be relevant.
Yeah, I think the thought process that we're going through trying to prep for this DLC is relevant regardless of the context. Mm-hmm. So no, I liked it.
All right, let's wrap this sucker up.
All right. Well, I'm glad that we came to some conclusions.
Honestly, I feel like I've gotten closer to making a decision. Like, it's weird like discussing it like this and then just being like, well, wait a second. Maybe I'm all good.
Maybe I should take my own advice. Yeah. Sometimes it just takes... speaking the words aloud mm-hmm. to get you there. So I don't know how much closer I am to making a decision. I need to stop the merry-go-round at some point in my head. And yeah. And just, it's just a roulette wheel and just like, wow, that was terrible. Hold on. It's
that was better. It was still bad.
It stopped it. Yeah. It's like, Amber Steel. Okay.
See, you've said Amber Steel like every single time, so I really think... No, wait, you haven't. Nope, you've said Amethyst Steel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't know.
I don't know.
You don't know.
I have no idea. I'm going to surprise everybody. I'm going to be the one bringing Emerald Ruby. Like, no, guys, seriously, it's really good. I mean, I'm surprised you're not trying to do Ruby Sapphire. Like, it's floating around out there. It still has some tools.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't feel tempted at all.
I mean, like, what are you missing? You're missing popsicles. You're missing Tamatoas. You're missing Tamatoas. You're missing Be Prepared. You're missing Brawl. You're missing Sisu. You're missing Sisu. I mean, like, it's basically the same deck.
Oh, I played Sisu, but I didn't play Sisu, so...
That's true. We still have one of the Sisus.
Yeah, the baby.
The baby Sisu. All right. Well, that's it. We
done.
We're done for this episode. Thanks for listening again. And tell us what you're taking to Milwaukee and give us your melee name. I mean, your RPH name. And a physical description.
Yes. Oh my god. We've got this figured out. This is great.
That's what we're gonna do to get our edge.
It's only fair they know us now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just evening the playing field. Okay, but no, so like tell us what your thought process is for deciding on a deck. Like, are you vibes based? Are you do you have a playtest group? Are you testing everything out? I mean, we built a gauntlet that we've been, you know, we've been proxying decks and built a gauntlet and smashing them against each other. But what are you guys doing? Tell us what your thought process is.
Yeah, are you the I picked a deck, set one, and I don't care what happens to it, I'm going to keep playing that deck?
I see that a lot, you know, like there are some people who are just like, I have wanted Ruby Steel to be a thing forever, and I will play that deck until I die. So, I mean, like, do it, man. Like, yeah. Take down Milwaukee with Ruby Steel. I would love to see it.
I mean, I'm not going to play Ruby Steel, so I don't think that's what should happen.
I'll happily get second place to Ruby Steel.
Okay, I'll get second place.
No, you already said you don't want it. You already said you don't want it. It's too late.
Fine, I'll take third.
Okay, I'm in second, you're in third. Our Ruby Steel player is in first.
All right, figure it out. I can live with that.
All right, everybody, this is a game plan. And break. Okay.